Can you tell us what led to you to want to produce this DVD, and what can the audience expect in Torah Codes?
Well, first of all, sometimes I'll talk to people and they don't even know that the Torah codes exist. No one's ever heard of the Bible codes or the Torah codes. It's almost like the information that came out about it originally was in the 90s. And so now there's a whole new generation of people that have kind of sprung up that have never heard about it. Where I first heard about it was in Michael Drosnin's book, The Bible Code, that he published in 1997. And I was so blown away with that book that I bought all of his books through, as he re would release them. Finally, there was Bible Code 3 was the last one, which I don't think 3 is as good as 1. I think the first book, everyone should have that just for reference. Whether or not you agree with everything Drosnin says in it, everybody should have that in their library. But the story goes, and this is true, I'm not making this up. I had a friend over to my studio, and this is back when I had a studio in Hollywood for Pinlight. And it was really a cool place. We had the whole second floor of the Mack Sennett stage, which was the studio where Mabel Normand and Charlie Chaplin used to rehearse.
Oh, wow.
So it was a creaky, musty old building, leaked water like a sieve. But we had redone the second story and refinished the floors and fixed the windows and painted the ceiling and made it into a really pretty edit suite. And outside my windows, you could see the Hollywood sign and the whole deal. So I felt like, man, here I am where it started 100 years ago. And my friend Lee came over and we got to talking about stuff. And we were working on a documentary together called The Words Project, where we had famous rappers that wanted to come in and rap the words of Christ.
Oh, wow.
And I wouldn't use any Christian bands because they already know this stuff. I wanted guys from the inner city, kids just coming up into the thing, Two Live Crew, Bone Thugs and Harmony, The Last Poets, which are all Muslims. I wanted those kind of people to get involved in this and see what happens. And it was a phenomenal experience. I mean, it was just life-changing. That went on for a couple of years. So while we were doing that, Lisa said, "Well, what do you want to do next?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "It would really be great. The Bible codes have always intrigued me, and I've never seen a documentary that has done it the way that I want to, because usually they use all of the codes in Michael Drosnin's book as the basis for these documentaries." I said, "Well, that's okay. But what about going and seeing the rabbis and seeing what they're doing? Let's go to Israel. Let's figure out how we could do that." But I said, "That's just crazy." I said, "First of all, I have no idea how I'd ever get in touch with the rabbis or if they would even talk to me. And I have no budget. So much for that, So that was it. So he was working with a famous rock musician at the time, Ricky Lee Jones, Chucky's in Love, Chucky's in Love.
All
Remember
right.
that? And she's really a brilliant musician. She's done, I don't know, 9, 10 albums. She's done an awful lot of work, and she has a photographic memory. She treats rock music like a classical musician would. I mean, she's really, really incredible. She can sit down and, by memory, rattle off the lyrics of any Beatles tune. I mean, so that's kind of girl that Ricky is. Anyway, she'd come over and would do stuff with her. So he had this, he was like co-producer for some of the work she was doing, and she was doing a concert in Tokyo. So he gets back from that a couple of weeks later and decided to visit his brother Paul. His brother lives in New York and writes music for motion pictures and stuff. He did the movie W with Oliver Stone. So he gets on a JetBlue flight and they cancel the flight due to bad weather. So he gets off. This is how crazy this was. I'm just telling you what happened, and I know it's taking a while, but
No, that's fine. Take
we
your
got
time.
time.
We have no time limit here.
It's just that you don't won't believe it unless I put all the details in, and this is going to be in my book when I finally get it finished. But he was asked to come back 2 days later, and they scheduled the flight. And his seat assignment, he looks at his boarding pass, put him near the back of the plane next to a guy who looked like a rabbi. Now, this was a totally random seat assignment, And Lee didn't know who this guy was. Come to find out, it was Professor Robert Herlick of City University in New York, the guy that worked with Professor Eliyahu Rips, Rabbi Glazerson, Art Levitt, Harold Gans, all of the world experts in the Torah codes. And he was writing software to help search the codes. And his expertise was in probability, a piece of the puzzle that they didn't have till Robert showed up. So Lee just told him, well, we were just talking about the codes the other day, and my friend Richard would like to do a film about it. So they land in LaGuardia, and Lee tossed Robert his cell phone, and I'm connected. Now, I did nothing to instigate this connection. I had nothing to do with it. I didn't ask for it. We just had a brief discussion, and bam, all of a sudden, Lee's sitting next to the only guy who is really at that level working in the entire U.S. Now, there's other code experts in the U.S., but Professor Herlick is probably the most respected of all of them.
Wow.
So he introduced me to the whole group. And so a few months later, I had a conversation with another man who was a broadcaster, and I said, you guys are interested in the Bible codes, right? He said, yeah. Well, I said, well, I'm trying to fund a documentary, and would you be interested in it? He said, possibly. So I wrote Professor Herlick, and I said, have you guys found anything interesting in the codes that I could tell this broadcaster about to try to raise funds to do this film? And he writes me back a one-liner, Professor Rips and Rabbi Glazerson will be in Los Angeles tomorrow. Here's their cell phone number. And I'm going, what? I mean, this is what happens to me. It's happened to me in Watchers. It's happened to me in the Torah Code. Stuff just when I need something, it just shows up mysteriously.
Wow.
It's weird. But I have to attribute it to the hand of God. When you need something, things just happen. I've jokingly said to people, maybe if I just sat on my couch and just and waited around, I wouldn't have to do anything. You know? He's like, oh, this is just coming. Oh, okay, thanks, Lord. I don't know, because sometimes I feel so stupid. There's so much I don't understand or can't remember anymore, and I try really hard. But, I mean, it's like, you know, it's just amazes me when things like this happen. So I had a private meeting, and I grabbed Lee and dragged him with me to the meeting. And we're in the Fairfax district of Hollywood, the Jewish community there. And this is on Beverly Boulevard. And there's, you know, rabbis walking down the street with all of their, you know, attire on, their special hats they wear, and the suits and everything. It's really incredible that they basically put their whole life out there. I'm a rabbi, so deal with it. You know? And a lot of them, I don't know if a lot of them are all that open to talking with a Christian. And of course, I don't wear my Christianity on my sleeve, because we're all part of the same thing. You know, especially now that I find out I'm half Jewish and didn't know it.
Wow.
But that whole thing was, the meeting went really extremely well. And that was my introduction to the Torah codes. So I kind of made a few promises to them, because they had been burned by Christian ministries who had taken their work and used it to promote their own ministries as if it's a Christian discovery and it's really a Jewish one.
Yeah.
So look, I'm not going to do that. And I said, while I would like to talk about Jesus, this is an Old Testament thing, and I can keep my conversations focused on the Torah, and I'm fine with that, because the Torah means a lot to me. It's like a real favorite part of the Bible for me anyway, because there's so much stuff in there. And later, when I interviewed Rips, as you saw in the film, I thought what he said was so cool. It kind of gave me chill bumps when I was in his apartment. You know, so the Torah to him became a book of miracles.
Yeah.
And I thought about that because you don't really think of miracles so much as events in the Torah. Well, there was the great flood, and there was this, there was that. But then when you think about the miracles that happened, the stuff that happened with Joseph, mm-hmm. the things that happened with Lot during the Sodom and Gomorrah incident, Enoch suddenly disappearing, and he was not, for God took him. Mm-hmm. What about those things?
Yeah.
I mean, it's what makes the Torah really interesting. Those are the things about the Torah that really fascinate me. And then when you get into the wilderness stuff, there's some weird stuff going on there. I mean, some believe there's this book that I just bought. I think his name is Roger Isaacs. I can look it up here in 1 second. But he wrote a book called Talking with God. It's basically his 50-year-long study about the Ark of the Covenant.
Wow.
He believes that the Ark actually was a speaking device. Like when the high priest went into the Holy of Holies, he could verbally hear God talking through the Ark.
Wow.
And this is why, and also he postulates that the Ark itself is radioactive.
Huh.
Looking at it from a very scientific aspect, which to me is very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, when you think about it, This is what we don't get this stuff in church. I don't know why, mm-hmm. but sometimes we need to explore. Okay, the scriptures tell us all this. Why did they have to wear all of these things to go mm-hmm. in to, you know, worship in the Holy of Holies? Why were the inner walls of the Holy of Holies gold plated? Mm-hmm. Why did they have to tie a string around the high priest's foot in case he died while he was in there? What about the ephod, which you know, the Jews call the ephod, mm-hmm. and the crazy lights that come on and off when you ask it questions? What about all that stuff? Why do we never discuss that in church? I think it's wrong that we've just ignored these things. That stuff's really interesting.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like also, it kind of gives us clues of the high-tech nature of all this, that there was stuff going on there that's big spiritual stuff happening, but also utilizing high-tech devices that we, you know, the Bible says that all these devices were made with great cunning. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? You know, so maybe they were just really good craftsmen, but there's things that we get into here. I think it's called the Shamir, which was a stick that they used to inscribe the names of the tribes onto those jewels on the ephod. And apparently, according to some of my Jewish archaeological friends that really know this stuff, it was a radioactive isotope embedded in this stick.
Wow.
But actually, because they were not allowed to touch it with anything metallic.
Huh.
It says that in ancient texts. So they had to inscribe something, and this would etch those crystals without touching them. So there's a lot of technology that's been lost to us over the centuries that if we study this stuff, we might have clues, and maybe we can reinvent some of these things to use ourselves.